Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio episode 1103. This is your host Danny, and joining me for this special episode of Gamertag Radio, I have Reggie Fils-Aimé, the former president of Nintendo of America. Yes, we had a great conversation about a lot of things. Now, I'm not going to say much because I want you to just listen to the conversation that we had from the start. It was the amazing conversation. So I can't wait. Can't wait for you to listen to this. But first, head over to gamertagradio.com. Post your comments and feedback and listen to our past episodes. You can find us on any podcast app. Just search for Gamertag Radio and we're there. Once you find us, make sure to subscribe and also follow us or post a review. It will help us out a lot. If you would like to be part of our fan mail discussion, here's how you can contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
So like I was saying, I had an amazing conversation with Reggie about his life, also about his career, and a lot of other things, and I hope you guys enjoy this. I think this is a great way to celebrate our 16th anniversary of Gamertag Radio. And before I play the interview, I just want to say to everyone, thank you so much for supporting us throughout the years. Even if it's just one episode or a few episodes, or if you've been listening to us for years, it means a lot to me. Because when I started GTR 16 years ago, I never thought that I will still be here, still creating content for you guys, and been getting a lot of opportunities, a lot of support from the community. It's amazing. I just love it, and I hope to do more of this, man. I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. So shout out to Paris, to Pete, to Mandy, David, Jonathan, aka Butter, everybody, Arctic, Tanya, everybody that's been supporting GTR and helping us with mods on Twitch and everything, and Discord. Thank you so much. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to the crew. And can't wait for some more, man. Can't wait to do more stuff with everybody, man. All right. So let's go with my conversation with Reggie Fils-Aimé. And we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Well, first of all, it's an honor to have Reggie Fils-Aimé here on the show. Reggie, you probably don't know about this, but I've been trying for so long to get you on the show when you used to work at Nintendo, and it was tough. You're a tough guy to get on the show, man, to book interviews.
During the Nintendo days, you know, we had so many requests. So we would parse them out for the different executives, and as you can expect, my list was long.
Yeah, yes.
Of the people who wanted to spend time with me. So, you know, I'm glad we're able to do it now.
Yes, yes.
I've been enjoying listening to Gamertag Radio and all the guests you've had. So it's all good.
Cool. Now, but let's take it back, because I know you grew up in New York City. I'm from New York also. I grew up in Manhattan, uptown. My dad also lived in the Bronx, and I know you're from the Bronx too. How was it for you growing up in New York City, man, back in the early days?
So, you know, born in the Bronx, and I was there until I was 8 years old. And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't know what life is like other than your own little world, your own little bubble. And so for me and my brother, you know, life was all good. We were, we lived in a five-floor walk-up in the Bronx by Crotona Park. And we had family living close by to us in the Bronx, as well as other family in Queens. And so, you know, as a kid, it's all good until you see the neighborhood deteriorating around you. And, the things that you see as a kid, you know, one time my brother and I were mugged over 50 cents. We would go get the Sunday paper for my dad. We would probably the paper was 35 cents, so there'd be money left over. We'd get some candy. It was the thing that my brother and I did. And one day we were mugged for our 50 cents. So imagine this, right? So now we go back up the five floor walk up, and I tell this to my mother, and she's incensed. She's incensed that her boys were mugged. So we walk back to this little corner bodega, and my brother and I point out these two, they're probably in their teens, who had mugged us for our 50 cents. And then my mother proceeds to ask them for the money back, and they run, they take off. And we proceed to follow them for about five blocks. They stop in front of a group of men, probably in their 20s and early 30s. And this whole drama plays out where we're asking for our 50 cents back. Long story short, we got our 50 cents back and went back to the house. But that was one clue that the neighborhood was beginning to deteriorate. And then the other clue, and I tell this story in a commencement address I delivered a few years back, in our five-floor walk-up, someone was stabbed on the roof of the building and proceeded to stumble out the building, leaving what started off as dime-shaped pools of blood, drops of blood. By the time the guy was on the fifth floor, it was half-dollar-size drops of blood. And the person survived, but these are all the clues that that the neighborhood was going downhill. My father had been working a couple of jobs, and we moved out shortly thereafter. Moved out to Long Island. I grew up in Brentwood, Long Island. So I'm a native New Yorker. I think all of the learnings that I had as a kid and a teenager and young man, the tenacity, the aggressiveness, the drive, that all came from my upbringing in the Bronx and Long Island.
Yeah, you know what? When you mentioned about getting mugged, that happened to me one time at a young age too. And actually, I had a Nintendo Game Boy with me with a lot of games. And some kids came up to me and they robbed me in New York City too. And so hearing that story reminded me of that. Like I've been through a lot too in my life when I was living in New York. But at the same time, like you said, like I learned a lot growing up in New York, street smart, business, networking with people. All that was because of New York City, the culture, because my parents are Dominican. I know your family is from Haiti, right? Haitian? Yeah, yeah. So I learned a lot because of New York, so. Yeah, it's good that you brought that up. But also, let me ask you this. Did you also discover gaming while in New York City, or this was after you moved out of the city?
Yeah, for me, I discovered gaming when I was on Long Island. So now, I'm probably in my early teenage years. A buddy of mine had, a Coleco system. Another buddy had an Atari system. So early video games as a teenager, I was certainly exposed to. When I went off to college, that's where I was playing a lot of pinball. Probably dropped a few quarters into a Donkey Kong machine here and there. But for me, in terms of console gaming, I didn't discover console gaming until I was in my late 20s, early 30s with a Super Nintendo Entertainment System. That was my first home system. But played Friends system and certainly was exposed to a lot of video games in my young adult life.
What was there a game that made you decide, like, I want to do this. I want to get into the business of this.
So what's interesting for me is, You know, my exposure to video games very much was as a consumer, as a player, and having those experiences of, you know, wow, this is great. This is great entertainment. This is something that I enjoy playing. And for me, Super Mario World on the SNES was an early passion. But my true passion from a game standpoint was Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. That was a game that I played for hours and hours. I played with my son. And so, you know, I grew up from that side, from playing and you know, I had a Sega Genesis in my house. I had a PS2 in my house. I had a, you know, all of the Nintendo systems. Until I was interviewing at Nintendo, I didn't yet have a GameCube, but I had all of the systems. I had the first Xbox. So it wasn't that I suddenly woke up and said, I want to join the business as an executive. Mm-hmm. I received a recruiter call that brought me into the industry, but having played games and having had a love for games as a form of entertainment, I think that certainly helped me be successful in the game.
So you used to work before Nintendo, was it Viacom, right? So you were involved with TV. That's very different than the gaming side, gaming industry. So what are the things that you learned while starting working at Nintendo you didn't know, you had no idea while working there?
So I would say this. So, you know, my background is all marketing, general management, driving revenue. That's what I did for my 20 plus year career before I walked in the door at Nintendo. And you know, during that time, I had learned a lot of, let me call them business principles, things that drove me in terms of how I thought about business, how I thought about innovation, how I thought about doing things differently. Mm-hmm. And so all of those experiences were wrapped up in me when I walked in the door at Nintendo. And what I was able to do was to apply those skills, those knowledge, those experiences in a business that, you know, you know, the business was in tough shape when I joined the company in late 2000. Mm-hmm. You know, GameCube was not succeeding in the marketplace. PS2 was the dominant system. Microsoft had just entered with Xbox, and they were doing well in the U.S. They were just beginning to pick up steam in Europe. They were not doing well in Asia, which created a different challenge, trying to explain to the executives in Japan why Xbox was succeeding outside of the Asia marketplace. But the business was in a tough shape. And so, you know, what it did is it created an opportunity for a person who had seen a variety of different businesses. You know, you touch on Viacom, but I'd spent years in the restaurant industry. I'd spent years at Procter & Gamble. So I was just able to take all of these experiences and apply them and to have some early successes and to drive the business.
What was like the most challenging part working at Nintendo for you? Was it for the sales? Was it promotion? What was the most difficult part for you working with her?
No, I would say, look, so I have to say right at the start, I was so fortunate in joining the company and having a number of key people that I had very strong relationships with. I saw eye to eye. The most important one was Satoru Iwata and the relationship that he and I were able to have. And so, you know, there wasn't any one part of the business that was so difficult or so challenging. What was challenging was communicating the needs of the players, the needs of the business, for the U.S. and Canada and Latin America and even Europe, communicating those needs back to Mr. Iwata and the other executives in Japan, that was the heavy lift. That was the heavy work. because, you know, the market is so different in Japan. And up until that time, so many of those executives really hadn't spent a lot of time outside the U.S. So I was the one who was saying, you know, what we needed to do as we thought about launching the DS. I was the one who was pushing for different things as we were preparing to launch the Wii. It was always providing an alternative point of view. And I was fortunate that I won a lot of the arguments, and the things we were able to do worked. And the business then became much healthier and much more dominant.
You know, I remember going to E3, I can't remember what year it was, that you had a demo where people could go right after the press conference of Nintendo. People could try out the 3DS. And I'm like, does this going to work? Real 3D? I got to see this. And I remember playing it for the first time. I'm like, oh my God, this actually works. 3D, what? That to me was one of my favorite highlights. Do you have any favorite highlights working at while you were in Nintendo, of maybe a E3 press conference or launching a product or anything like that for you?
You know, there's so many. Mm. You know, everything from my very first E3, right, and the famous words, you know, my name is Reggie, about kicking ass and taking names, and we're about making games. That was a phenomenal moment. At that same E3, when we played the Zelda trailer for what became Twilight Princess, and having the media cry, I mean, literally, the jaded media and these folks had tears streaming down their face. The event where we launched the Wii, and myself and Mr. Wada, Mr. Miyamoto, and a contestant that had won the opportunity to play live with us on stage, that was a magical moment. The demo of Wii Fit was a magical moment where I said, you know, my body is ready. I mean, all of these were magical moments. And I you know, to ask me to pick just one is like asking me which is my favorite child. You
know,
each one was different. Each one was special. Each one really helped drive the business, the brand, the products forward. And that's what made those 15 years with the company so special.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. You know what, Reggie? Another highlight for me as a fan was seeing, I think it was Sean Layden, you and Phil Spencer together at the Game Awards. Shout out to Jeff Keighley. That was a really cool moment in gaming. I wish we see more of that, because sometimes I'll see you and other people from other companies. They'll go to like the Xbox booth and they'll get to see, you know, stuff early there. Or Xbox will go to PlayStation, Nintendo. I want the audience to see more of that. I think every time I read online, like everybody, like they have their favorite product, but it seems like everybody's like against each other with this console war stuff, you know. But I wish we'd see more of that, man. What do you think about that? Like, of just moments like that, getting together with your friends in the industry.
So what's interesting about that is, you know, first, the video game business today is by far the biggest form of entertainment. I mean, it's as big as streaming movies, box office, music, all lumped together, right? But for as big as the industry is, the executives in the business, we all know each other. And what do I mean by that? So, you know, there's the Industry Trade Association, the ESA. Mm-hmm. And so as executives, we meet quarterly to talk about what's good for the industry. As executives, we, you know, share a meal. As executives, you know, we may have the need to be on a phone call with each other, talking about industry-related issues. And so while the fans see the console wars, battle, and look, make no mistake, every single executive wants to win. Every single executive wants to drive their business. But the fact of the matter is, it's a very small industry. And you know, recently I did a video with Robbie Bach and Jack Tretton. You know, Robbie and I have had lunch since I've retired. Jack and I are advisors to a small games company. So it's really a small industry when you get right down to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I wish there were more public opportunities to show the unity of the industry. And the moment that Jeff was able to orchestrate truly was magical. He had help. There's a lot of stories, you know.
Yes, I heard.
Who helped really make that happen? Jeff will have to be the one to tell the true story. But there are a lot of folks who helped make that happen.
That's cool. You know, so a couple of years ago, I went to Dominican Republic. And I used to live over there for a couple of years. I remember that was during the time, Super Nintendo days, Sega Genesis days. So, and it was cool seeing people playing these games, not knowing English, and they're playing like Final Fantasy, and they'll complete and they'll finish these games without knowing anything to read in English, which is amazing. So when I went a couple of years ago to the Dominican Republic, I wanted to meet the gaming community. I haven't been there for a while. And one of the common things that they will bring up is that they feel left out. They want to learn more about the industry, but there's no workshops. There's no stuff for them to learn about the business, right? And I promised them that I was going to go over there and slowly we'll bring people from the industry to maybe do like a workshop or a video conference or something like that, right? So I got together with Unity and we did a workshop for developers over there. And it was amazing. I got to see their games. I'm like, oh my God, I wish we get to see more of this. But I bet Haiti, there's probably game devs over there too that are very talented. They don't have the opportunity to show their games and stuff. So when I read about your charity, it reminded me of that. So I want you to talk about the charity that you have with Harold over there in New York City. And what made you decide to start doing that now also?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So Harold Goldberg, well-known writer and journalist in the games industry. And Harold and I have known each other for years. You know, he has interviewed me. He and I shared meals back in the day. And so Harold knew that I was from the Bronx. And Harold shared with me over a number of years the work that the New York Video Game Critics Circle was doing to mentor young adults in what started in the Bronx, but is now in the Lower East Side and parts of this program mm-hmm. are now expanding into other markets in the United States. But the core idea is to use video games as the medium to mentor young adults from underserved communities. And so it's using video games to help teach these kids critical thinking skills, teaching them writing skills because they have to write a critique or an essay of a particular video game. They have to engage with the other kids in the program. And you know, these types of interactions are really, they're groundbreaking for so many of these mentees. And you know, Harold had been doing this for years and years and years. And as I announced my retirement from Nintendo, Harold reached out to me and said, Reggie, you had just been in the Bronx with some of these students. You know, I saw the impact that you had. I want you to join our board, and I want you to help in getting the word out and doing more with the New York Video Games Critics Circle. So that's how it started in terms of you know the personal relationship with Howard, the opportunity for me to physically see the work that the charity is doing, and then to join the board and to work along with Harold to get the word out in terms of how important it is to mentor our young people, how they gravitate to video games as a medium, and what we can do. And we just did the 10th annual New York Game Awards, which fundraises for the charity. Huge success. We had fantastic support from Twitch, from YouTube. We honored four legends, because we honored Brenda and John Romero together which hadn't been done before. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful program that enables me to give back to my home city, if you will, in terms of the Bronx, and allows us to touch young people in new and unique ways and to help them progress in their life, whether it's progressing as one mentee is progressing in the world of video games and creative writing. But others, you know, it's an opportunity for them to get some experience, to get internships, and it's been a foundational program.
Definitely. Do you see yourself also doing this like international too, or just going to focus us on Hopetown, New York?
You know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out how to scale the program, because the mentoring activity we do is small groups. And it's a lot of personal involvement by the people who are participating in the program. So, you know, what we're thinking through is, you know, where else do we have passionate journalists who want to invest time in this way, who understand video games, who have relationships with some local developers and can help shape this program. We're trying to figure out how to scale it. I have to say it's probably going to be first focus here in the United States. But I can absolutely see this type of program growing internationally. Why? Because young people have a passion for video games. It's a great medium to write about, to analyze, to discuss. It's a very personal medium in that way. So I see a huge opportunity for it to scale.
You know, Reggie, I know you have a lot of cool stories that haven't been told yet. I can see you doing a book in the future. And if that happens, I'll definitely will support it by. But do you see yourself writing a book, a total book, like, you know, about how was it for you growing up and stuff from the industry that people don't know still to this day?
I have to say, I have a number of creative projects going on. I am putting pen to paper and capturing thoughts and also thinking about, you know, podcasts. The experience I had with Harold was fantastic. Again, we did that as a fundraiser for the charity, and that worked really well. So I absolutely see myself doing something in the creative space, you know, I've got no title to announce here today. I've got no details to share, but you know, I've been asked by many people to capture these ideas, and I've begun that process.
Hey, let me know when that happens. So today I read that the ESA are planning to bring back E3, but in a virtual way for this year. I personally think that slowly, I think it's just going to go away, in my opinion. Maybe I might be wrong, but the reason is I feel like companies figured out a way how to promote their products. And even Nintendo back then, you know, they decided to have no press conferences, just Nintendo Direct. You know, the digital side has been changing a lot throughout the years in the industry. Do you see that happening at E3 coming back, or do you think companies are still going to focus on digital presentations and go from there?
So first, I think that E3 as an event and a moment in time where new content is shared and celebrated, I think that is truly magical for the global games business. I saw the same announcement, and look, I'm outside of those meetings, I'm outside of the discussions, but I have to say what I read to me doesn't sound all that compelling. If I were king for a day, I'll tell you how I would do it. I do think doing this digitally is absolutely right. And the reason for that is there's more than the 60,000 people who would typically attend an E3. There are millions more interested in finding out what's going on. And executing an event digitally is the way to bring that to life. So that's that's the right track. Having said that, I think that the platform holders need to find a way digitally to enable their fans, their players, to experience the content. Because that's the key for E3, right? The ability to be playing The Last of Us Part 3 for the first time, or to play that next Breath of the Wild game for the first time, or to play, you know, the next great game coming from, you know, the new amalgamation of all of the Xbox studios. To play for the first time is what's magical. And the platform holders need to figure out how to deliver that experience to their fans during an E3-like digital experience. I think that would be huge. But you know what I've read, as I said, doesn't go down that path. And if you don't have all of these different elements working together, so the big announcements, the hands-on, the opportunity in a well-defined time frame to have all of these announcements, I think that's what's key to a successful E3 in the future. And, you know, candidly, if the ESA doesn't do it, then other people will, right? You've mentioned, you know, my good friend, Jeff Keighley. Jeff, you know, did something very provocative last year with his Summer of Games event. You know, he's going to do something similar again this year. Mm-hmm. So if the ESA doesn't figure out how to do this, someone else will.
That's true. But you know what the best part? When a company has like a presentation, they'll say, and the game is out now, or the demo is out now, beta is out now. People get excited, they get their favorite console device, and they'll play it. And like you said, that's a worldwide experience. People will get hands-on worldwide instead of depending on watching everything or reading everything online. You know, so I think that will work. Was there any moment where do you feel like you miss attending events too, like ever since you retired?
Look, first, you know, we need to recognize we're in this, you know, this time of COVID where everything is topsy-turvy. But do I look forward to a day where I can be at an event that I can mingle with fans and other executives? You know, I do some public speaking. I've been doing that through the screen as we're doing now. It's just not the same. Mm-hmm. And so I look forward to the day of in-person conferences and events. So much happens, you know, in a sidebar conversation or something that was unplanned, you know, a meal that hastily comes together or a meeting at the hotel bar. I mean, these are part of what make those experiences so special, and I miss those. And I look forward to the day when we're back doing those.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Are we going to continue with my conversation with Reggie Fizeme? But first, let's talk about our sponsor. Gamertag Radio is supported by Oregon State University eCampus, a leader in online education. Advance your career by enrolling in one of the 80-plus programs Oregon State delivers online, including engineering, environmental sciences, and public health. OSU eCampus blends 21st century innovation with over 150 years of institutional excellence, increasing your access to a life-changing education. Experience the latest educational technology and online courses that utilize virtual reality, 3D animation, AR, and other interactive elements. And with students in all 50 states and more than 50 countries, you will engage and collaborate with a worldwide network of classmates. Plus, all online programs and classes are developed by the same world-class faculty who teach on campus at OSU. See for yourself why Oregon State is consistently ranked in the nation's top 10 by U.S. News and World Report. So Gamertag Radio listeners, go right now and visit ecampusoregonstate.edu/GTR to find the program that fits you best. One more time, that's ecampus.oregonstate.edu/GTR.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
What are your thoughts now of like everything going like cloud gaming? Do you see that being big in the future? You think it's a little bit too early? Because I'm a huge fan of cloud gaming, but I want to hear your thoughts about it.
So part of it is everyone needs to be clear what they mean when they talk about cloud gaming. Because, you know, cloud as a delivery system for game experiences, yeah, I think that is going to be, it's an idea. It's something that is certainly coming to the industry. I don't think it is around the corner. I think it is a number of years away, notwithstanding the recent announcements by Google in their efforts. But, you know, cloud is just going to be the next delivery system. I was fortunate to have a conversation with one of the early developers for the Nintendo Entertainment System. He was in the United States doing some interviews, and I had an opportunity just to have a small conversation with him. And I asked him, you know, so what was your guiding development principle when you were creating the Nintendo Entertainment System? He said, Reggie-san, all we wanted to do was to have a system that would let the player play Donkey Kong at home. That's all I wanted. And so for this creator, the console, how it hooked up to the TV, that was all the delivery mechanism for their view of the killer app being Donkey Kong. Killer app ended up being Mario Brothers and Super Mario Brothers and Zelda and all of the other great entertainment. But I share this story because to me, it really, it speaks to the cloud. The cloud is going to be a delivery mechanism. And what I think the cloud, meaning an unlimited amount of computations, the ability to stream content more effectively, potentially better use of AI and other elements to make a fundamentally better gaming experience, that's what excites me. So it's not cloud as the delivery system. It's cloud in terms of what types of new content and new experiences could come to the consumer that can't be done today with an on-premise computing device, also called your game console or your PC. Those are the interesting things that I hope creators see and leverage as cloud truly comes about.
Were you surprised that the Switch became a huge success? Because I like the Wii U. I felt like it was a cool system. The only issues that I had was it was just confusing for like the consumer market. But I like the system. It has some cool games. And now I noticed that Nintendo been porting a lot of those great games from the Wii U to the Switch. But were you surprised that the Switch was a huge success? Because it's getting a lot of support from the community. Still to this day, a lot of people have been buying it. So.
No, it was not a surprise to me. And I say this because, you know, the first time I saw the Nintendo DS, hair on the back of my neck stood up. You know, the team was demoing, you know, an early prototype of what would become Nintendogs. And so, you know, immediately I saw the potential. The first time I picked up a Wii remote and played, again, a rudimentary experience that would become Wii Sports, I knew it was going to be magical. And, you know, the day that I sat with Mr. Iwata and held a prototype Twitch and we talked about the concept, I knew it was going to be magical. And I say this because the system was solving for a key player complaint. And that complaint is, I'm having fun, I'm playing my game, and now I need to stop because I got to go to work or I got to go to school, and I can't take my game with me. I can't continue playing that game. So Switch, with the opportunity to play on that big screen TV, take it out of the dock and go play in handheld mode, it met a fundamental consumer desire. And you know, that was the triggering moment. Now, there were so many other smart things that the company did. You know, the support for Unity and Unreal, which allowed all of the great independent content to come. Mm-hmm. You know, a number of other key decisions. But yeah, no, it's not a surprise. And candidly, knowing that it was going to be successful is what helped make my retirement decision easy, because, you know, I knew the company was going to be in a great shape for at least a few years.
How important to you is representation of people of color in the game industry? Because throughout the years when I started, honestly, when I'll go to an event, I was like the only Latino there. You know, and now I'm seeing more people of color getting involved with not only content creation, but development and execs. You know, you're the first person of color to be a president for a gaming company, you know, a major, major gaming company. So why do you think representation matters to you?
So representation is tremendously important. You know, you're framing the question in terms of black and brown,
mm-hmm.
but I would argue
everything.
Across, right, the entire spectrum, critically important to me. It is a core principle for me and has been throughout my entire career. So just, you know, a short little diversion. When I was a hiring manager at Procter & Gamble, and I was hiring a person who was going to be working for me, entry-level brand management job, and I fought with my boss to hire a woman who was a non-traditional candidate. Typically, P&G would hire from big-name schools, people with an MBA. This woman came from a smaller school, no MBA, had more of a sales background than a marketing background. But I saw in her drive, ability to get things done, real street smarts. And you know, this woman ended up being a 20-plus year executive at Procter & Gamble. She spent much more time at the company and achieved a much higher level than I did by the time I had left the company. And she's a good friend of mine to this day. We serve on a board together. But it just reinforces that representation and challenging ideals of, you know, who the perfect candidate or who the perfect executive or who you should be on your team, all of that needs to be thrown out the window. We need diversity in its broadest sense across every single industry. And bringing it back to the games industry, you know, I have to say, representation in the games industry is woefully inadequate. Woefully inadequate. Again, I said earlier, this is the biggest form of entertainment. And yet, where are the diverse studio heads? Where are the diverse executives? Where is representation throughout the industry? It's just not there. And, you know, certainly, I am thinking through how to help push that message and that agenda forward. But given the size of the industry, the amount of diversity in its broadest sense is woefully inadequate. And it's something that has to be addressed, and it has to be addressed as a leadership issue. It is certainly something at my time at Nintendo, we made it a priority. And we started for Nintendo of America a number of diversity initiatives that continue to this day. But much more needs to be done across the entire industry.
And I'm glad that you're making that change, you know, and especially going to the city of New York and talking to the students over there. I think that's a major change. I think that's going to help out a lot. And I hope to see more of that, not only from you, but from other people too that are part of the industry. One last thing. Let's say 50 years, 100 years from now, man. You know, people that go and do some research about gaming and they found you. What is it that you want people to remember? Remember you as?
I hope that I'm remembered as an executive who successfully drove a company, but more importantly, you know, touched the players and the fans in a unique and compelling way. You know, someone that truly had fun in his job, who motivated the fans, and in the end, after his retirement from a games company, did so much more to drive purpose and passion in creating that next generation of leaders. That's what I'm focused on now in mm-hmm. retirement. You know, the board service work that I do, the consulting that I do, the public speaking that I do, the work with the New York Video Game Critics Circle, all of it is focused on creating that next generation of leaders. And hopefully I'm remembered as someone who successfully did that and gave birth to a whole new generation of people who drove, you know, the broader business community.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I think that's a great way to end it right there. Not for Reggie, man. I just want to say thank you, man. And hopefully you could come back in the future, you know, whatever project you have on in the future. I'd love to have you on and you could talk about it, promote it. And maybe we'll talk about other things too, you know, so.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I would love to do that. Thanks so much. Really enjoyed it. You guys need to keep plugging along. I'm a passionate listener to the podcast and you and the guys are doing a great job.
But thanks a lot, man. All right, cool.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, that's it. That was the interview with Reggie, and thank you everyone for listening. Man, close to 50 minutes. Woof! 50 minutes of just conversation about a lot of things, man. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Please hit me up on Twitter at Godfrey, GODFREE. Please let me know your thoughts, your opinions about everything, and also hit me up on Discord or fan mail at gamertagradio.com, and yeah, we'll go from there. All right, everyone, thank you for listening to Gamertag Radio episode 1103. Stay tuned, we have more content coming up in the future, and I have a couple surprises coming up, and I can't wait to talk about it. It's gonna be a lot of fun. But first, everybody, head over to gamertagradio.com, listen to our past episodes. You can find us on any podcast app, just search for Gamertag Radio. Make sure to subscribe and follow us and also post a review. It will help us get discovered, help us climb on the chart, top of the charts. We need your support. If you would like to be part of our family discussion, this is how you can contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Like I said, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.